Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. So, today's the last day, and today we're going to talk about, first of all, Pralambasura. And if we've got time, the Brahmins, but I don't know, you know, if we're going to have time, actually, frankly. But at least we'll talk about Pralambasura. He's an interesting demon. At least we're not saying, you know, during the Prema Dhvani, all the demons, Kijai, or anything like that. Anyway, he is an intriguing character. Well, what's one, you know, like, striking or different thing about Pralambasura? Can you think of anything? Ah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Well done. Yeah, he was, sometimes when we do the whole course and we give an exam at the end and all that, then sometimes we ask the devotees, how did Krishna kill Pralambasura? And they... Anyway, that's a trick question. Yeah, so this is an important point in a number of ways, that Pralambasura is one of two, at least from this list of the 21, mentioned in the Bhagavatam, Pralambasura is one of just two who were killed not by Krishna, but by Lord Balaram. Who is the other one? In Vrindavan we're talking about. Vrindavan. Vatsasura. Niyat. No, it wasn't Vatsasura. Dainakasura, yes, Dainakasura, the donkey demon. So the two of them were killed by Lord Balaram. And in terms of the Anathas, it's very important that they both represent like big Anathas, broad, you know, a sort of like a category of anatha, which can be subdivided into subcategories of, you know, different more specific anathas. So Pralambasura represents lusty inclinations, desire for personal gain or honor. In other words, the mode of passion. That's sort of like an umbrella category. And so many, even if we look through these other anathas, we'll see that a number of them fit under that broad heading. But Pralambasura, in a general and broad way, he represents the whole condition of being under the mode of passion. So, in other words, very much interested in personal sense gratification, and of course there's so many ways you can gratify your senses. Whereas Dainakasura, he represents the mode of ignorance, forgetfulness of your spiritual nature and general dullness and so on like that. Yes. So, and that also is a broad type of anatha, which when you go through the other ones, you'll see that a number of the other ones can fit under the heading of the mode of ignorance or the mode of passion. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he talks about these two, Dainakasura and Pralambasura, and their anath, the anathas that they represent. He says that these are particularly important anathas, and whereas with the other anathas, in many cases, if you just continue on with your Krishna consciousness and try and chant nicely and so on and so forth, and just in a normal way proceed to try and make progress in your Krishna consciousness, then in many cases, without making any particular effort to get rid of this particular anatha, in many cases, they'll just dissolve and go away of their own accord without focusing on them and developing some strategy for dealing with that particular condition, that part of your conditioning. But in the case of Dainikasura and Pralambasura Bhaktivinoda Thakura, this is in Chaitanya Shikshamrita where all this information about these demons representing anathas comes from. So he says there that in the case of these two anathas, the devotee has to make a special effort, a focused effort, how to get free from my tendency towards ignorance, how to get free from my tendency towards the mode of passion. We have to be on, like, more particularly on guard. Yeah. You know, sometimes devotees feel, and in a certain sense, you know, the point is there that with many of these things, you don't exactly have to make a specific effort. Like, you know, we're vegetarian. So it's just part of our program to be vegetarian. It's not like we have to make a particular effort to become vegetarian in a certain sense. So some devotees think that if a certain anatha attacks you, then you don't need to sort of really do anything about it, make any, like, a separate effort, you could say, to deal with that, but you just chant and you carry on, it'll go away. But, you know, we do have to be on guard, particularly against these dangerous anathas. Like, you know, mode of passion. You feel angry with someone. Someone tells you that you're a nonsense. You know, you're a dirty rat. What sort of devotee are you? And then you get angry and you think, yes, I'll punch him in the nose. So this is an anatha to do with the mode of ignorance. Yes. So, you know, according to this philosophy that, you know, we'll just chant and it'll go away of its own accord and we don't need to make a particular effort now to deal with it specifically. According to that philosophy, it would be okay to turn around and punch him in the nose because you're not meant to make an extraneous effort, you know, a separate endeavor. But we say, no, you should make an effort. If your mind is trying to take you this way or that way out of Krishna consciousness, you have to stand up and tell your mind, no. Yeah, you have to do that. So particularly in regard to the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, we need to do that. Mode of passion means, of course I think you understand, but that particularly it means I'm very concerned about what I'm getting out of it, my gain. This is mode of passion. Mode of goodness means, you know, detached from my gain and thinking in a much broader sense, the general good, what is the best thing really all round. This is mode of goodness. But mode of passion means, right, okay, what's in it for me? What do I want? Mode of ignorance means I don't really care, I'll just sleep. And, doesn't really matter. In this way, the mode of ignorance may look peaceful because they're so dull, they're just sort of... And sometimes devotees who may be a little influenced by the mode of ignorance may think that people like that are in the mode of goodness. He's very peaceful. He's just sitting there, doesn't really seem to care or worry about anything. But it may just be the mode of ignorance. But mode of passion is very prominent because it's me. What's best for me? What's in it for me? What will I get out of it? My personal gain, my personal pleasure, my personal enjoyment, how to avoid my personal suffering, these are like fundamental conditions of the mode of passion. Yeah, whereas mode of ignorance, fundamental condition, sleep. If we are attracted to sleeping, we wake up in the morning. I don't know if you've ever experienced it. The alarm goes off. You wake up and you spontaneously think, oh no. You never had that. I didn't think you would, but just in case you meet someone sometime, then you'll know. Ah. Yeah, attraction to sleeping. This is just classic tamagun. Prabhupada was giving a class once. It's recorded. And everyone, he had just arrived in the center. Everyone had been up all night preparing things for him. And now here he is. It's Bhagavatam class. So everyone's sitting there going like... So Prabhupada asked, what is this? All this heads going down. What is it? So then the devotees said, the devotees have been up all night. And Prabhupada said, well, you must take enough rest. And then Prabhupada said, but for some people, as you said, for some of you, even if you get 10 hours rest, it won't be enough. You'll still fall asleep. Even if you sleep all day. Anyway, what does that mean? It means tamagun. And anything more than 6 or 7 hours of sleep, and, pretty much, unless you're a special case who has some special condition, but for your so to speak, normal devotee, if you've had 7 hours sleep and you find you're sitting there and falling asleep still, you're in tamagun. So watch out. Sleep, madness, if you find you're going a little funny, then you must know this is tamagun. Classic symptoms. All right. So pralambasura then, mode of passion. And the way we're going to look at it is on a slightly more subtle level in terms of the anatta. Anyway, when we get to it. So now, this pastime takes place during the summer. And of course it's hot, like now. It's summer, right? This is ridiculous, isn't it? Should lodge a complaint. Turn the heating up. But summer, where you get a real summer, means it's hot. It's really hot. Like in India, Dr. Leela Da was telling me, when he left Vrindavan just a week ago, say, it was 45. It's pretty hot. Pretty hot. Whew. It was up to 50. So it was summer, midsummer. And summer in India means lots of flowers, beautiful flowers, sort of luxuriant, colorful, fragrant. Believe it or not, when I first went to India, that was 76, 27 years ago. The marigolds, you know what a marigold is? Oh, yeah, Prabhupada's got marigolds. The marigolds were very fragrant. Would you believe it? You smell one of these marigolds, if you smell anything, it'll be sort of a little strange. Yeah. But even now, the marigolds there also smell a bit strange because I think they get the seed from America. But in those days, the marigolds smelt very nice. What to speak of the roses. Wow. Amazing. So it was like a beautiful scene. A beautiful scene, midsummer, although it's hot, but very colorful, very fragrant, very nice. And Krishna. Krishna is out with the cowherd boys, herding the cows. Am I right? Cows. I think it's the cows. I think it's the cows and not the calves by this time. Anyway, let's just say the cows. I think it's the cows. So they're out herding the cows. Yeah, the cows. And things have developed. Things have developed from yesterday. We were talking about the Brahma Vimohana Leela, and they were with the calves, the little cows, the babies. So, in other words, it's a couple of years further on, actually, because Krishna herded the calves for 3 years till he was six. Then he started herding the cows, so a few years on. And Krishna, by this time, had started regularly having pastimes with the gopis. Prior to that, he wasn't so much. Actually, you know, even when Krishna's just little, I mean, he's only six or seven, that's pretty little. But even when he was really little, like when he was still at home with Mother Yashoda before he was three, he would still watch the gopis. Yeah. Rupa Goswami talks about this. And here he is, he's only six or seven or something, you know. But he's involved. He's quite involved as a regular program. Going out, you know, they go out and herd the cows, particularly when they're at Nandagram, when Krishna's living at Nandagram, which is from about six and a half or seven, say, onwards. Then every day Krishna would go out with the cowherd boys, and first of all they go to Tir Kadamba, a little bit out, 2 or 3 kilometers perhaps, out into the fields. And then Krishna would say to the boys, okay, you look after the cows, I'll be back shortly. And some of them who knew, and who were actually, you know, like their attitudes, they assist Krishna from the male point of view. They assist him in his conjugal pastimes. So they have that sort of aptitude. So that for them it was okay, fine. And even sometimes they would go and render different services in the course of the conjugal pastimes. So Krishna would go off and meet Radharani at Tir Kadamba every day when he was going out from Nandagram. But the other cowherd boys who didn't have any type of aptitude for the conjugal pastime, the conjugal rasa, they were just, you know, through and through tough, cowherd boys. Tough guys, I tell you what. Really. So they also, for a while, you know, Krishna was saying, he started saying every day, look, you know, just hold on, I'll be back in a while. And they would wonder, where's he going? But after a while, they figured it out. So these more sort of, I don't know if you would say macho cowherd boys, but the ones who are more just strictly in the fraternal rasa, when they understood, they would think, why? What's he going to meet these girls for? I mean, really, you know? What fun can you have with girls? You hit them, and they just cry. What's the use of girls? They can't run very fast. And, you know, they always want to play with dolls and flowers and stuff. I mean, come on, Krishna. So it was like that. It was really like that. But he would do it. And some of the boys like Subal, Sridham, they're also, you know, they have that sort of orientation. So they would go and assist. But the others, some of the others who are just like, you know, through and through tough guys, they thought that this is just, what's wrong with Krishna? Something wrong with him. We should talk to him. Straighten him out. So it was going on. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in this chapter, he makes the comment that at this point, Krishna and the cowherd boys, they started the tax collecting pastimes. You know about the tax collecting pastimes? The tough guys, they really like these pastimes. You stop the girls and you give them a hard time. Ha, ha, ha. Make them cry. Yeah, that's good. So like this. It's all transcendental. Yeah. Oh, we mentioned the other day a little bit, didn't we? In regard to Raghunath Das and Rupa Goswami. On Govardhan Hill, regularly, Krishna and the cowherd boys would be there. The gopis would come, they're crossing the hill, and Krishna and the cowherd boys would stop them and demand a tax. That we heard about you. You're just sneaking around with your milk, dairy products. You want to sell them on the black market, make lots of money. We heard about you, and today we got you. So Raghunath Das himself gives a really nice description in one book. I think it's Dan Kaley. Comedy. Actually, I think, is it Dan Kaley Comedy or Chintamani? One's by Rupa Goswami, that other one by Rupa Goswami. One's by Raghunath Das. How Krishna and the cowherd boys, they stopped the gopis who had lots of ghee on their heads and demanded tax. For every one of you, we want a pile of diamonds. A pile of diamonds. Because we know you're making lots of money on the black market. But the gopis, they didn't have piles of diamonds. So Krishna said, all right, no problem. Come back tomorrow and pay. We'll just keep Lalita here as a hostage. It's okay. But of course, you know, Lalita didn't think it was okay. Then Krishna chose Radharani. And Krishna said, all right, I'm going to charge you a special tax, special toll. So he went from the parting of her hair, from the parting of her hair down through just about every part of her body to the bottom of her lotus feet. and asked for a tax for every part. You know, for the parting in your hair, I want 1,000,000 rubies only. For your forehead, I want 100,000 emeralds. For your curved eyebrows, I want 1,000,000 sapphire bows. Because, you know, Radharani fires arrows. Her eyebrows are considered bows. And she fires arrows in the form of glances, you know, little sidelong glances, which hit Krishna every time and just knock him out completely. So like this, Krishna went all the way through till in the end there's this fantastic amount. Just, you know, incredible amount. Billions of dollars worth. Otherwise, we're not letting any of you go anywhere. You know, you say you want to go home and get these jewels, but we know you'll just escape, so you're not going anywhere. You must just produce them now. So it was obviously no one was going anywhere. So then Nandi Mukhi came. And she is, well, there are different groups of gopis. There's a group who have a conjugal relationship with Krishna. And there are other groups, but there's one group who are friends of Krishna, not conjugal, friends. They're generally in Balaram's group, and they have a conjugal relationship with him. So Nandi Mukhi's like that. And she's a little older, intelligent girl. So she came and said, okay, I've got it all figured out. I give you my word that if you let these girls go so they can go home and get all these things to pay the tax, I give you my word that tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, they will meet you down by that kund. There's a kund just nearby there, Govardhan Hill. I give my word they'll be there. Otherwise, I'll pay the whole tax myself. So Krishna accepted, all right. 11 o'clock, we'll be there, and we'll take the tax. Ha, 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 to the gopis. So the next day, the gopis arrived there at 10 o'clock. They meant to be there at 11. They got there at 10, and they hid behind the trees. And when Krishna and the cowherd boys came at 11 o'clock, you know, all full of laughing and joking about these girls. You know, we got these girls this time, didn't we? Ha ha. So then the gopis jumped out from behind the trees and smashed them with sticks and fists and grabbed their seekers and tied them to the trees by their seekers and then just continuing to go bang, bang. And the cowherd boys, they ended up crying, even though they're tough boys. But, you know, 6, 7 years old, they can still cry quite easily. So they were crying. Krishna was upset. Bang, bang. He's also getting hit. Then Krishna said, all right, all right. Let us go. We'll do anything. Just tell us. We'll do it. It doesn't matter. But just let us go. So Radharani said, all right. You let us off the tax. No tax. And Krishna said, yes, yes, no tax. Don't worry about it. We're only joking anyway. So it ended like that. And there's a lot more to it. Yeah. So that place is called Dan Nivartan Kund. Dan means tax, and Nivartan means nullified. Dan Nivartan Kund. That kund where the tax was nullified. means just written off. So anyway, Krishna and the cowherd boys, they were getting into things like this. And, joking around a lot and a lot of sports. A lot of sports. Team games. So here, in this case, they decided to have some sort of game. Anyway, some sort of team game. And the result will be that whichever team, there are two teams, whichever team wins must be carried on the shoulders of the losing team members. And, generally, of course, they would joke about it and tell them, "Ah, you lost, ha ha, we're on your shoulders, just see." So then they chose teams. In this case, Krishna and Balaram were the team leaders. But oftentimes, it was other boys, they would be the team leaders. Now, there's an interesting point here. Is that the boys, the leaders, two leaders, they would take it in turns to choose the team members. "I'll choose you," then the other one, "I'll choose you," then "I'll choose you," and like this. But, you know what would happen? No one would choose Krishna. Because Krishna, he's so affectionate to his devotees that whenever there's some race, some competition, some wrestling match between Krishna and a devotee, particularly these cowherd boys, he always lets the other one win. Always. So Krishna always loses with the cowherd boys. So they're choosing their teams, okay. "And why don't you take Krishna?" "No, you can have him if you want." So they get to the end, and Krishna was the only one who hadn't been chosen. So the one whose turn it is to choose next, but there's only Krishna, the other one tells him, "Oh, go on, there, he's yours." But then that one would say, "Well, you can have him if you want." So it's like that. But in this case, Krishna and Balaram were the team leaders, and they chose. Now, as it happened, Pralambasura was already there by that time. There was one boy, doesn't say who, but... and it doesn't say why exactly, but he had to stay home. He had some household duties to do or something like that. Doesn't really say exactly. But anyway, he stayed home. So Pralambasura, he assumed the form of that boy. So he looked like one of the regular cowherd boys. One of the team. And everyone thought, he's just, it's okay. But Krishna knew. However, Krishna was the only one who knew. Even Balaram didn't know. But Krishna, understanding what the pastime, what was meant to happen, Krishna initially didn't do anything. It's not like he realized, a demon. Just immediately like that and grab him and smash him and then that's it. No, Krishna treated him very nicely. Nice smile. "Oh, I thought you had to stay home." No, it's okay, I came out. "Oh, good. That's very nice. We'll play together." But in the back of Krishna's mind, he's thinking, "We're going to get you. We are really going to get you." But Pralambasura thought, "Wow, I fooled him." But Balaram, under the influence of Yoga Maya, he didn't know. He thought, this is who he is, like the original boy. Yes, so why then didn't Krishna just finish him off on the spot? Or, you know, if he's meant to be Balaram's demon, why didn't he just tell Balaram? And Balaram could finish him off. Why did he let the whole pastime go on and develop and unfold in the way that it did? Because you know how it unfolds that what happened was they had this team game, and Krishna's team lost. Krishna's team lost. And Pralambasura was on Krishna's team, and they lost. So they had to carry Balaram's team. So Pralambasura, he was checking things out. Okay, I'm going to try and kill Krishna, but wait a minute. You know, I've heard stories that he killed some of my other friends, and maybe he's really tough, and whew, I don't know. So he decided, I'm gonna leave Krishna. I'll try and kill Balaram. So they lost. Balaram's team won. And Pralambasura, as a member of Krishna's losing team, he carried Balaram. So they're carrying them, all the members of Krishna's team are carrying Balaram's team for some distance, and they're all joking and laughing. But then Pralambasura, he just sort of eased away to the side, and just behind the trees and through the trees. And Balaram was having a good time. Suddenly he looked around. Oh, where are the other boys? I think this little boy who's carrying me, he got lost. Because Balaram's under Yoga Maya. He doesn't know. Yeah, I think he got lost. So Balaram, you know, whatever, he tapped him on the head and say, Hari Bol, you know, we took a wrong turning. Pralambasura realized, I've got to do it now. Otherwise, we're going to have to go back and join all the other boys. I'm going to have to do it now. So Pralambasura started to expand his body. And initially, Balaram's sitting there on his shoulders. Then he sees he's going up. And the boy is sort of changing. His shape is changing. And initially, Balaram thought, oh, what has happened to my little boyfriend? But then Balaram realized it's a demon. So Balaram sat there for a while. This is not so much referred to in the Bhagavatam. But Balaram sat on his shoulders for a while, way up, like up almost in the clouds, really way up. And cruised around, looking around Vrajmandala. This is why Krishna didn't either kill Pralambasura himself or tell Balaram so he would kill him initially. Because Krishna he knew how the pastime was going to develop. And Krishna was thinking, I remember that time with Trinavarta. And we went up high, and I looked, I saw Govardhan Hill and Radhakund, I saw all these places, and the beauty of the whole Vrajmandala, it was so nice. Then I had to kill him, but it was really nice. But Balaram, he never had the same chance. So therefore, Krishna didn't tell Balaram, because he wanted Balaram to have the same opportunity. So there's Balaram looking around. Although he doesn't, actually Balaram's feeling a little frightened. He's under Yoga Maya. So he's still thinking, I'm a cowherd boy, and, you know, I'm not God. So he's between two states of consciousness. But he's enjoying looking around. There's the Yamuna River. Look at it. So nice. And, oh, there's my place, the places we like. We have our pastimes. So then, Krishna, in Vishnu Purana, this pastime is also described. And according to the description there, Krishna then called out to Balaram to wake him up. So Krishna said, what is this mentality of a mere man which you're exhibiting, O soul of everything? Even though your own true nature is more confidential than all other secret things. So then Balaram realized everything very clearly. And he smashed him on the head. In South Africa, anyway, this will be pretty meaningless to you, but they have a pretty good way of putting it. If someone punches somebody, it's called, you give him a what happened. Do you get that? So, this is how they say things in South Africa. He gave him a what happened. So it was really like that. Palambasura's head immediately split in two. Krishna. And he fell to the ground and he vomited blood. Wow. It's amazing. You never saw anyone go through anything like that, did you? But to the cowherd boys, this is great. They're really tough guys. Vomiting blood. Head split in two and blood everywhere, obviously. He fell to the ground just like a mountain attacked by Indra. Smash. And he attained impersonal liberation. Impersonal liberation. Yeah. So there you go. That's the end of Pralambasura. By the mercy of Lord Balaram. So now, this Pralambasura, he represents the mode of passion. And, you know, obviously the mode of passion means like breaking the regulative principles for us. Breaking regulative principles and so on like that. And just getting into Maya and thinking of enjoying. This is what it means. But for us, particularly for devotees, mode of passion, first thing is the regulative principles or breaking them. If you really get into the mode of passion, you'll break some regulative principles. But if you come to the point where you can follow the regulative principles okay, which, you know, of course, is a lot easier said than done, really, but shall we say at least most of the time, you're kind of handling it, even though your mind may sort of do a bit of a number on you from time to time, but generally you can handle it. So then what do you think? I'm liberated. Close. I'm following regular principles. I'm not really having such a big problem with it. Maybe just occasionally, but on the whole, I can handle it. Well, there's a very, very interesting discussion in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's during the pastime of the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. So, there, I assume many of you would be familiar with that pastime. Lord Chaitanya's there with the devotees. The Jagannath Rath Yatra will be shortly in a few days or something like that. They want to prepare the Gundicha temple. because Jagannath, the deities, are coming for a week. So you've got to get everything clean and very nice. So Lord Chaitanya and the devotees, they cleaned the Gundicha temple. And they had a competition. Who could collect the most dirt? Yeah. And Lord Chaitanya, he collected more than everyone else put together. Yeah. And, you know, there's also joking in Krishna consciousness. So, you know, he was cleaning so much and he would go around watching, check out the other devotees, how are you doing, you're cleaning okay, you're getting a lot of dirt, how much dirt you got. And some of the devotees were more into it than others. So those who weren't into it as much, at least, as the others, and they weren't collecting so much dirt, Lord Chaitanya would come and say, oh, you're collecting so much dirt. Well done. And then they'd realize he's being sarcastic. Sarcasm is humor in the mode of ignorance. He is being sarcastic. I better get myself together and clean more. Anyway, they cleaned. And the place looked so clean. It was like gleaming, squeaky clean, they say. So clean. And the devotees thought, right, that's great. We did a good job. Jagannath can come. Then Lord Chaitanya said, we should clean it again. And the devotees thought, what? Clean it again? Can't clean it again. There's nothing to clean. It's already clean. The Lord Chaitanya said, no, we must clean it again. So Lord Chaitanya himself went and cleaned it again, the whole place. And he got more dirt the second time than all the dirt put together of everyone the first time. So Srila Prabhupada, around that place, in that chapter, in the Madhyalila, what is it? It's like chapter 12 or something like that. 11 or 12. So there, Prabhupada gives one extensive purport. Very extensive purport. Actually referring to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's comments on the subject. How the second cleaning was more important. And even though it seemed from on a certain level to not be necessary at all, but actually it was more important. And actually there was more dirt. I mean, more even than there was the first time. In other words, it was really, you know, very essential, even though it didn't seem to be needed even. So the basic point that comes out is that the first cleansing is like, you know, it's compared to cleansing the heart. That's the whole idea and the purport. So the first cleansing is like cleaning the heart to the point where you can follow the regulative principles. And you're not, you know, every now and then breaking one and struggling to recover, but then after a while you break a principle again. First cleansing means you come to the point you're following the regulative principles. You can basically handle it without actually engaging in sinful activity, even though the mind, you know, may sometimes let you down. So, a devotee may think that I'm doing like this. I'm doing pretty good. I've made advancement. I'm Krishna conscious. But then the point is made that the second cleaning, there's more dirt. There's even more dirt. And it's very dangerous. There's still contamination left. And it's even more dangerous. And it's even worse because it didn't come out the first time. Means it's sort of like stronger dirt. But when you look from a certain perspective, you may think, you may not see it at all. And you may think, I'm okay, I'm clean, my heart is clean, I'm purified now. So, there are six particular contaminations which Prabhupada refers to and lists out, which make up, like, you know, the greater part or a major part of the second degree of contamination, which Lord Chaitanya cleaned out the second time, and which is like more tenacious dirt. It hangs in there more strongly and more difficult to get out. So the first is, do you know what they are? Okay, all right. First is, as listed here, kuti nati. Should we write it on the board? What's going to happen to our sound system? Why don't you, we can put the microphone up. Okay, someone else can write it up. Why don't you write it up? See here? Kuti nati. K-U-T-I hyphen N-A-T-I. Which Prabhupada translates, first of all, as fault. Huh? Kuti nati. I. You got it. Oh, N-A-T-I. Anyway, that's okay. So that means fault finding or duplicity. But they can write that down themselves. The next is pratishtasa. You know pratishta? Pratishtasa. Second is TH. First is just a T. Pratishtasa. That means the desire for name and fame and high position, but you don't need to write that up. But the devotees can write it if they want. Then third is Jiva Himsa. Jiva Himsa. Envy or even violence towards other living entities. The fourth is Nishid Achar. N-I-S-I-D-D-H-A-C-A-R-A. R-A. Nishid Achar. Achar, we know, means activities. So this means accepting things forbidden in Shastra. Fifth is kama, K-A-M-A, desire for material gain. It's like a subtler form of lust. And sixth is puja, P-U-J-A, wanting to be worshipped. So let's just say a little bit about these. Briefly. Kutinati, duplicity. If you're a congregational devotee, for argument's sake, then, you know, you're living in your flat or your house somewhere. You come into the temple from time to time. When you come to the temple, you know, you've got your dhoti on, your tilak or your sari like this, and your beads, and Hare Krishna, you know, you're all fired up. Everyone thinks, oh, very good. You go home, you go inside, you lock the door from the inside. Off comes the dhoti and tilak and whatever. On comes the television. Or, you know, your latest rock music. You make sure no devotees are around. And away you go. So this is called duplicity. Two-faced. One face is the nice devotee. The other face is the Rolling Stones fan. Probably, you're probably too young for that, but who? Michael Jackson. Am I? Some sort of craziness like that. Yeah. What's a popular program, TV program in Belgium? Don't know. What was that? We have an expert. Say? Oh, okay. Anyway, I think you get the idea. Yeah, we should be honest. You know, if you have a problem, don't try to hide it, but reveal your mind to a suitable devotee, not just anyone. If you reveal your mind to the local gossip, then before you know, it'll be the hot news around the temple, how you're, you know, in trouble in some way. Now, I remember one time, this is now like 1975 or something. I was living in Bhaktivedanta Manor near London. And someone told me a juicy piece of gossip. Did you hear about such and such? And somehow it caught me and I thought, oh, really? And, you know, I made like fatal error. I told someone else. Later in the day, someone came and told me, did you hear about such and such, the same person, and told me a story which vaguely resembled what I had heard, but it was definitely not the same story. And this is now the latest hot bit of info. Anyway, that's another thing. But we shouldn't be duplicitous. If we're having trouble, well, that may be. If it is, it is. You know, we have to be able to see reality for what it is. Then we should reveal our minds to some suitable devotees who can help us. Pratishtha, the desire for name and fame and high position, profit, adoration, and distinction. This is the subtle form of just sex life as such, but it's more subtle. It's more subtle. You know, even sometimes devotees may tell each other, you know, it may happen, I'd like to be the temple president. But you don't normally hear devotees talking about, oh, I like that girl. Right? It's more subtle. This is more subtle. Yeah, so that's a more subtle form of lust. Jiva himsa, envy, or even violence to other living entities. Prabhupada says, the first thing this means for devotees is that we don't preach to people. We could, and obviously they need it desperately, but we don't. Yeah, for devotees, that's how we take jiva himsa. So you can see it's more subtle. It's more subtle. The Sunday feast is there, and many guests are there normally. But what do? We grab the feast and head to our room. Plenty, making sure we've got enough, at least enough of each preparation for a couple of people. Sometimes, you know, there's at least some types of devotees who are like that. So it's not so good. Karma, desire for material gain, but in a more subtle form, like trying to utilize devotional service for our sense gratification. I'm a Sankirtan devotee, I need a car. Okay, but I need a good car, a BMW. There's a saying in Russia, it's a joke. I am not so rich that I can afford a cheap car. How does that sound? You know, the strategy is, if I get a cheap car, it'll break down all the time. And, you know, it's going to just be very awkward. So I should get a good car. Yeah, you know, I'm going out on Sankirtan, I'm traveling all over Benelux. And, you know, if I break down, oh my God, what a loss. So therefore I should get a very good car. Anyway, I think you get the idea. I'm referring to something excessive. Yes, like this. Preaching to the opposite sex. Of course, sometimes we will have to do it. But, you know, if we get into the habit, and then someone tells us, come on, look, you know, Let the ladies preach to the ladies. And but then you may think, what? I'm preaching, Prabhu. Come on. So like this, we're getting into more subtle areas, but they're real. Oh, and I missed out. Nishad Achar. You know, sometimes, because in many places, particularly South Africa where I go, where I'm based, we have big congregation, thousands of people. So we go and visit them often, and sometimes we stay at their places. So sometimes we check the refrigerator. What's in the fridge? Just to see how these people are doing. And you know, initially we were really surprised how often we would find, you know, like some store-bought chutney or pickle or something. And if you look through the ingredients, you find onions. Or some cheese, but it's just some cheese. It's not like a specifically vegetarian cheese. So Nishad Achar, accepting things forbidden in Scripture, it means like that. It doesn't just mean that you don't drink liquor or smoke marijuana. But it means on a more subtle level. These are subtle contaminations. And puja, hankering for popularity, even to be worshipped, more than just prophet adoration and distinction. A bit more than like that, than that. Yeah, so these are subtle contaminations. But they're more dangerous because they're more tenacious. You know, the very gross things in Madhurya Kadambini, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur talks about how there are different types of anathas. One of them is types of anathas arising from your previous sin. Means like just gross attraction to breaking regulative principles, basically. And then there are other types of anathas, like anathas arising from Vaishnav or Namaparad. So, the anathas, in other words, the effects of your previous sinful activities, he says these different anathas, they go away on different levels of your advancement. And right early on, the anathas arising from your previous sin, early in your spiritual life, they go away. But anathas arising from aparad, they may still be there when you're on the level of bhava, at least to some degree. So we're talking about these types of things here. They're more subtle and more, you know, nastier. And they hang on more. And they're more difficult to get out. But if you don't watch out, they'll get you. Yeah. So what to do? Well, what Prabhupada suggests is, if the devotee at all wants, in fact, you know, Prabhupada, he's got such a way of putting things sometimes, in the same purport, Prabhupada says, regarding puja, desiring to be worshipped. Gradually, one desires to become a reputed devotee or an avatar incarnation. I don't know if any of you have experienced that anatha yet, but reputed devotee, well, you know, frankly, I wouldn't be surprised, at least sometimes. Then, next thing Prabhupada says, if the devotee at all wants to cleanse his heart, he must chant and hear the glories of the Lord. Sri Krishna. This is a simple process. Krishna himself will help cleanse the heart because he's already seated there. But the point really is that if we want to get free from these subtle, deep, dangerous anathas, then we have to really cultivate chanting without offenses. And just in our devotional service generally, We have to cultivate Krishna consciousness without offenses. Really work at it. And watch ourselves. And if we see that some offensiveness is coming, then we shouldn't tolerate it. We shouldn't tolerate it. We should smash it, cut it out, and be willing to chastise our minds a bit. You know, like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, beat your mind 100 times in the morning with a stick, and at night with a shoe, like that. And during the day, if your mind gets up and starts, you know, trying to do something, we shouldn't be afraid. We should know that I am not this mind. And if this mind tries to get the better of me, I shouldn't tolerate it. So like this, if we train our minds and really practice chanting without offenses, we can get free from this anatha. Hare Krishna. So again, there's no time for questions. We're into lunchtime. But thank you all for coming and taking part. I hope you found it interesting and maybe learnt a little something. Srila Prabhupada ki. Made zero.